What makes people risk their own lives to save people they don't know? Like someone who runs into a burning building to help the people inside, or someone who donates a kidney to save a stranger's life. How about healthcare workers who travel to West Africa to try to help Ebola victims? We will talk about the concept of extreme altruism this hour, and we'll welcome your questions and examples of extreme altruism from your life. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, October 30th. Have you or has someone you know ever risked your or their own safety to help someone else? Are you the recipient of extreme altruism? What happened? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is David Rand. He's an assistant professor of psychology, economics, and management at Yale University. He was one of the researchers on a recently published study that looked at extreme altruism. It was based on interviews with Carnegie Hero Medal winners and what led to their actions. He was also interviewed for the October Vox piece, The Science of Extreme Altruism, Why People Risk Their Lives to Save Strangers. And we have posted that piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Thanks for being with us. First off, what is the definition of extreme altruism?
Well, altruism in general is defined as when you do things that help other people at a cost to yourself. And then extreme altruism is when those potential costs to you are extremely large. So normal altruism might be something as small as holding a door for someone or, you know, giving money to, you know, someone that's in need, whereas extreme altruism is typically risking your life or doing something that has really serious consequences for you potentially in order to help others.
Is it different than being a hero?
I mean, it just depends what you mean by hero. I think that a lot of people see a certain extreme altruism actions as heroic. To me, hero often has some kind of leadership sense to it, but it's all just a definitional thing. It depends what you mean by hero.
Right. All right. So a hero who risks his or her own life to save the life of someone else or to help someone else is an extreme altruist.
Yep. And the extreme part being the extremeness of how costly it could be to them to do that, to give that help.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about your study on Carnegie Hero Medal winners. What did you do, and what does it show?
All right. So we were interested in trying to understand what's going on inside people's heads when they're engaged in extreme altruism, when they have the chance to help someone else at risk themselves. We wanted to try and understand what their cognitive process was like. And so in general, what I study is all different forms of altruism and cooperation. Usually we do these laboratory experiments where we give people small amounts of money and they choose how much to keep for themselves and how much to give to other people. Mm-hmm. And then we can, in particular, ask questions like, are people predisposed to help? Is there a sort of intuitive, automatic response to help that then, if you stop and think about it, the sort of calculus of self-interest makes you say, no, I'm going to just keep this money for myself? Or is it the case that your default predisposition is to be selfish, and then you have to use self-control to make yourself do the right thing? And so we looked at that issue in the context of these laboratory experiments, and we found a lot of evidence that if we make people rely more on their intuitions or go more with their gut, they actually are more helpful than if you make them stop and think carefully about it. And so the idea of this extreme altruism study is to say, does it seem like the same thing is true in the context of really extreme altruism rather than these kind of small-stakes laboratory situations? And so to answer that question, we wanted to find people that had risked their lives to save strangers and get a sense of how they made those decisions. So the Carnegie, there's this Carnegie Hero Foundation that gives awards to people that engage in extreme altruism. And so we use that as a database of extreme altruists, and we track down interviews that Carnegie Hero Medal recipients had given to newspaper or radio or, you know, various media outlets shortly after they had done their heroic act. And we sort of saw how they described the decision-making process that they had, and then we recruited a bunch of subjects for our experiment to read excerpts from these interviews in which the extreme altruists described their decision-making process and rate them on how much they seemed like sort of just intuitive going with the gut versus, you know, thinking it through and deciding that they should do the right thing.
Yeah.
And we also had a computer algorithm that analyzed the things that the text also. But what we found is that overwhelmingly these extreme altruists described their decisions as automatic, spontaneous desires to help, and things like, I'm thankful I was able to act and not think about it, or I just did what I felt like I needed to do. And there was very little of a kind of like, well, I was scared, but I thought this is really the right thing to do. I need to do it, and so I made myself act. And so what we conclude from this is, together with all of the carefully controlled laboratory experiments, this suggests that much of the time our kind of altruistic, helpful, pro-social behaviors are motivated by intuitions, by gut responses, and these kind of like non-rational processes can really play an important role in motivating people to do the right thing.
Interesting. Does everyone have this intuition, this gut response in a situation like that, you know, would require extreme altruism?
It's a great question. We don't have data on that in the context of extreme altruism, because that's a very hard thing to study, obviously, because you can't bring people into the lab and make them risk their lives. But it's pretty clear that there's a lot of variation across people in how altruistic they are, and in particular in what their sort of intuitive responses are. So it doesn't seem like it's a genetically hard-coded thing that's the same for everyone, but that there is a lot of variation.
Yeah, so bottom line, the extreme altruists don't think about what they're doing for the most part. They just do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like that is what, in my sense, what makes you an extreme altruist is having a sort of automatic response to help and being the kind of person that goes with that. So either, you know, you need both of those things to happen in order for the extreme altruist. You have to have the impulse of like, I want to save that guy. And you have the kind of, you have to be the person that says, I'm going to go with that impulse, versus like, let me stop and think and see whether this impulse actually makes sense.
We are talking about why people risk their lives or put themselves at some great risk to help others, to save a stranger. What questions do you have about extreme altruism? Do you have an example of extreme altruism from your life? Maybe you stepped in at some crisis and helped someone at risk to yourself. Maybe did you even think about it? Has someone helped you in that way? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is David Rand. He studies and studied extreme altruism. He's an assistant professor of psychology, economics, and management at Yale University. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about what makes people risk their lives to save people they don't know. And we are welcoming your questions for our guest expert and any examples of heroism or extreme altruism from your life. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is a researcher at Yale University. He was also interviewed for the October Vox piece, The Science of Extreme Altruism, Why People Risk Their Lives to Save Strangers, and we have posted that piece on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's go to the phones. Christina in Green Bay is with us first. Hello, Christina.
Hello.
Yes, tell us your story.
Well, I didn't actually save a human being, but when I was younger in high school, we were all in my front yard, and my dog, we lived on a busy street, and my dog had ran out into the middle of the street, and there were cars everywhere, but like your guest said, it was knee-jerk. I ran out into the middle of the street, grabbed my dog, almost got hit by a car, was being yelled at by my parents, but all I could think about was, I got to save my dog. Yeah. I got to save my dog.
Right. I can feel what you were feeling, Christina. Well, Dave, what about that? I mean, does it have to be a person?
No, I mean, I think that's a great point. It totally doesn't. I think that kind of impulse to help others that Paula was describing can totally extend to non-humans. Like I have a cat that I'm very, very much in love with, and I totally empathize with that. That like if something was going to happen to him, I would be very like I would have an immediate response to try and save him.
Yeah, well, good for you, Christina. I'm happy that you saved your dog, and I'm happy that you weren't hurt in the process. But you know what? Along those same lines, this was many years ago, I tried to break up a cat fight between two of my cats, one that was newly introduced to the household, and they were not getting along, and I got bit. So sometimes we do hurt ourselves when we do this.
Right. I mean, that's what makes it, you know, if there wasn't a danger of really getting hurt, then it wouldn't be extreme.
Yeah.
Right?
And does it make a difference? Does it make a difference if we're trying to save our own child as opposed to, you know, somebody else, you know, because it's someone we know?
Yeah, I think that it's a good question. And I think it certainly seems a lot different in that I think most people would not find it surprising, I think, that parents might risk their lives to save their own children. You're so sort of, you know, psychologically invested in your children, and even in a sort of more fundamental level, like, you know, if you want to think about biology or evolution, that's like it's a very primal desire to protect one's children. But I think what then is much more interesting is these things where people will even be willing to risk their lives to save strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the theory that I've been proposing is that the reason that we have this automatic response to why, or the reason some of us have this automatic response to try and help others, is because we get in the habit of, in general, being helpful, because in general in our life, that's what's in our own long-run self-interest. Like in the interactions with your family or your friends or your coworkers, it's in your long-run self-interest to be a helpful, cooperative person so that other people want to help you and want to cooperate with you. And so because of that, we get in the habit of cooperating, that becomes second nature, that are just kind of default responses, like, oh, I'll try and, you know, help, because if I do, that will come back to me. And then because that becomes our default, when we find ourselves in atypical situations, like a stranger's life is in danger, the first response is to treat it as if it was a normal situation where, you know, quote, makes sense to help. So the first response is treat it like a normal situation where it makes sense. And then the more you stop and think about it, you're more like, oh no, this situation is different. Like I might actually get killed here. I better not do it.
Ah, but in a way your theory is that we believe, some of us believe, what goes around comes around, karma. If I help this person, someday I'll be helped.
Well, yeah, but I think it's, so I do think that some people think like that, but I think it's that's not exactly what I'm saying, but it's more that in the context of our daily lives, that actually is true, right? That if you're like saying, I'm going to be helpful to my coworker, that really will come back around to you. You don't have to believe in some kind of mystical karma sense. It's straight up, if you interact repeatedly with the same person, there are future consequences for how you treat them. And so because that is the reality for most of us, we get in the habit of being cooperative because usually it does come back around to help us. And then it leads us to kind of either explicitly think that or just feel like, oh, the right thing to do is to be helpful, because usually that works out well.
John in Madison is with us next. Hello, John.
Hi. I was wondering, it's similar to the question was posed to you earlier. If the stranger has characteristics that are similar to yours, be it age, sex, race, occupation, are you more disposed to be altruistic to them? Or is there some, just like with children, are age extremes triggering this altruistic impulse more than others? And my other question is, you mentioned leadership. Are there any other personality characteristics of the altruistic person?
Okay, great question. So to start with the first one, so in some sense, both of the different possibilities that you gave are true. So there's a lot of evidence that people are more inclined to help others that are similar to them. So like the more similar someone else is to you, the more you will be inclined to help them, to cooperate with them, to work with them, all these different kind of things. This is a sort of general predisposition of humans to prefer people that are similar to them. But at the same time, I think there also are sort of particular kind of like vulnerable categories of people that can really tug at our heartstrings, like children. And honestly, I bet that for pet owners, you know, animals fall into that category also. That, you know, I bet a lot of people would be more inclined to try and save a dog than to save certain other kinds of people, because, you know, you see them as like a sort of vulnerable group that needs protecting. But anyway, so I think both of those are true. Definitely more likely to help people that are similar, but also there are types of people that are different from you, but that can be particularly attractive to help. In terms of characteristics of the altruists, that's a sort of active area of research. There's a woman, Abigail Marsh, who has done a lot of research on sort of neuroscience of extreme altruism, and she's found that she looked at kidney donors in particular, and that kidney donors have a particularly strong there's like a particular brain region associated with, for lack of a better word, certain kind of compassion, that you can sort of see anatomical differences between kidney donors and non-kidney donors in terms of that level of activity or size of this brain region.
So maybe leadership, maybe compassion. Is there any other personality trait of the extreme altruist?
There hasn't been that much direct research on it, but okay. Based on a lot of the work that I've done and on the findings of this current paper, I would also I would guess or hypothesize that one characteristic of extreme altruists, particularly of the kind of like risking, you know, jumping in front of a train to, you know, to save someone kind of thing, is people that are willing to go with their gut response. So people vary a lot in how much they sort of go with their intuitions versus being a sort of deliberative type of person. And I think that you need to be willing to go with those instinctive responses in order to follow through on them in these situations where you could save a person.
Well, we have another call. Tom in Cedarburg is with us. Hi, Tom.
Morning, Joy. On a bright, sunny, cold morning, I was driving down the road and I saw two like jets of flame coming out of the side of a chimney. So I called 911 right away and I pulled over and I ran up to the person's door and I knocked on the door, and this older gentleman was in his nightgown and he came to the door and he said, "What do you want?" I said, "I think you have a chimney fire." And he said, no, I don't." I said, "Come on, look." He came out and looked. He said, "Oh, yeah." And then a few moments later, we could hear the sirens. So I stuck around until the fire department got there, and then they did their work, and I came back a little bit later, and the fire department told them that if I hadn't have stopped, that or called 10 minutes later that the house would have been lost, and maybe their lives too. I don't know.
Well, good for you, Tom. Thanks for doing that. Here's someone who maybe didn't actually go running into the burning building, but helped make sure it wasn't a completely burning building, David.
Yeah. Yeah, so also, that's another form of, or another example of a kind of altruistic act, and that he took time out of what he was doing to help this other person. And so that's an example where I think to benefit the other person was extremely large, even though the cost to him wasn't very large.
Yeah, we are talking. We have to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about extreme altruism or heroism. And we are welcoming your questions about what motivates people to risk their lives, to put themselves at some sort of personal risk to save or help other people. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is David Rand, an assistant professor of psychology, economics, and management at Yale University, and he researches extreme altruism. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the science of extreme altruism this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:36 on this Thursday, October 30th. Our guest, David Rand, an assistant professor of psychology, economics, and management at Yale University, was one of the researchers on a recently published study that looked at extreme altruism. It was based on interviews with Carnegie Hero Medal winners and what led to their actions. What makes someone risk their lives to save people or help people that they don't even know? Turns out it's a gut response for the most part. That heroes sometimes act and don't think. And we welcome your thoughts and questions. What's the most extreme thing you've ever done to help someone? Why do you think people risk their lives to save others? Are you the recipient of extreme altruism? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So just before news time, we heard from Tom in Cedarburg, who said that he one day driving to work saw a house on fire. And got the occupant of the house out of there and to safety, and the fire department took care of everything, which was truly a very altruistic thing to do. Is there a difference between what he did and the person that runs into the burning building to save someone, David Rand?
Yeah, I think that it takes a lot less. I mean, it was super important that he did that, and it was really helpful. But it asked a lot less of him, and so I think many more people would be inclined to stop when they're driving and say, hey, your house is on fire. Many more people would be inclined to do that than the people that would be willing to actually run into the burning building, because you have to really be extreme in your altruism to do the latter.
Yeah, but if one is likely to do an altruistic act, is one likely to also do an extreme altruistic act?
Well, it certainly goes in the other direction, I think. That is, that someone that would run into the burning building to save the person would also, I'm sure, be willing to stop and alert the person that their house is on fire. But I think probably only a pretty small fraction of the people that would stop and say, hey, your house is on fire, would actually be willing to run in into the burning building.
Ah, all right. This is an extremely altruistic story. John on Twitter says, my son-in-law put his life on the line to pull a man off of some railroad tracks as a train was approaching. He had 15 seconds until the train got there. True hero. So that's an extreme altruist there.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's such an important thing for us to remember that people really do altruistic things for other people. I think so often, particularly in the U.S., we have this vision of human nature as fundamentally selfish. And I think that's just really not true. There's so many examples of people really doing great things for others that are just strangers. It's not, you know, their friends or family.
Do you, I'm just trying, is there something that we can learn from your research? I guess my question is, can we learn to be extreme altruists?
It's a very interesting question. It's something that we're studying. We definitely have evidence that you can make people more or less inclined to do small acts of altruism in various different ways. And seeing how that extends to real extreme altruism is a super important question, but it's really hard to study because you can't put people in those situations. That clearly wouldn't be ethical.
Yeah, you can't put somebody on the railroad tracks and see if people will save them or not.
Right, exactly. And you can ask hypothetical questions like, would you do this? But I think that doesn't have very much to do with what you would actually do, when it came down to it.
Yeah. We have other callers, so let's go to Tony in West Dallas. Hello, Tony.
Hello. I just wanted to see if there's any thing tied in with spirituality with people. I know, I'm being one of those people that just believes that my sole purpose to be on Earth is to help other people, not just, because I feel if I do something, the fruits of that in my older age are going to come back on me, like a karma thing. But I just do it because I feel whether I live or I die, that if, that's my function. That's why I'm put on this earth, to help others, other than, invest in people, not things. So I don't know if that's a factor as well.
Is there a spirituality link that we know of, David Rand?
I think in the context of extreme altruism, I don't know if anybody has looked at that or not, but it is the case in terms of sort of less extreme altruism. There's a lot of debate about the extent to which religious or spiritual people, whether they're more altruistic or not. And some studies find they are, and some studies find they are, but only to people, members of their own groups, like with religion, sort of the more altruistic to other members of their religion, but not more generally, and others don't. So it's an open question. There are certainly reasons that you might expect it, one being the one the caller said, which is that if you just have a sort of fundamental moral value that your purpose is to help others, that should make you more inclined to help others. And then also a lot of religious traditions have built in this idea that you get rewarded in the next life for being good in this life, which can create a kind of motivation to be good. It's in some sense kind of self-interested, but also has this obviously very pro-social and sort of altruistic component to it.
Thank you, Tony. Sarah in Zion, Illinois is next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
This thing happened a few years ago in my neighborhood that just was so amazing. I saw a huge plume of smoke in the sky, and I saw that a house down the couple of blocks away was burning down. So I went over to check it out, and there was this crowd of people. The house was burning, and I walked up to this teenage girl who looked really kind of shook up, and I said, "Do you know whose house that was?" And she said, "Yeah, that's my house." And I said, "Oh my God, what happened?" And she said, "Well, my mom's oxygen tank exploded because she was smoking." I was like, "Uh-oh," and we couldn't get her out of the house. Because she was she weighs 300 pounds and she's in a wheelchair. And then she said, and those two guys over there ran into the house and carried her out. And I was like, oh my God. So I went over to talk to these two guys, and they were both Hispanic. And I asked them what happened, and they told me the same thing. And I said, did you really go and save that lady? Yeah, we went in and saved her. And I said, well, oh my God, you saved her life. And he was like, yeah. Yeah, he just seemed really stunned at the whole thing. And I said, were you scared? And he looked at me like I was kind of stupid. And he's like, yeah.
Well, so are extreme altruists, are they, I guess, are they scared, Dave?
Yeah, it's... It's another really good question. I mean, I assume that people have to be at some level scared in these situations, but I think that a lot of the extreme altruists are either they're not thinking about it and they're just going with the impulse of, I got to help that person. And if I stopped and thought about it, then I would realize that I was scared. I would realize the danger, and therefore I wouldn't do it. Or it could be that they just have sort of emotional fear response, but they have an even bigger sort of emotional must-help response. But I do think that fear and all the things that go along with it are part of the reason that deliberative people would be less likely to be extreme altruists, because when you would stop and think about it, you would realize the danger, you would realize the fear, and then that would immobilize you.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, thanks for sharing that story. Well, those two guys deserved a Carnegie Hero Medal award.
Yeah, what? Send them in.
Yeah. So, what are some examples of the heroes you studied?
So, some of the example medal winners were there was a 21-year-old woman who rescued a drowning 69-year-old trapped in a car during a flash flood.
Wow.
Or a 70-year-old man that climbed into a burning vehicle to rescue a 48-year-old woman trapped inside after a car accident, those sorts of things. Or there was this really bizarre-sounding situation where a guy witnessed a random stabbing, that some guy just totally randomly started stabbing a teenage girl, and this hero, interposed himself, tackled the guy, prevented him from continuing to stab the woman, and got stabbed himself a number of times.
Wow. And just, you said send, so you people can nominate heroes by sending this into Carnegie.
I don't actually know how their nomination process works.
Right. I know you just were studying the winners, but it's something we should maybe post on our Facebook page in case people ever want to nominate someone for a hero medal. We are talking with David Rand, an assistant professor of psychology, economics, and management at Yale University. He studied heroes. He studied and interviewed winners of the Carnegie Hero Medal about what led to their actions. And we are talking about that study on what motivates extreme altruists, people who will risk their own life to help someone else, maybe even a stranger. So what questions do you have? What stories do you have to share? Any examples of extreme altruism in your life? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Wondering if you have ever done something at great risk to yourself in order to help another person. What were you thinking? Are you aware of someone else who has done this? We'd like to hear your story and your questions about extreme altruism. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with David Rand, an assistant professor of psychology, economics, and management at Yale University, who is an altruism researcher and did a study recently that looked at extreme altruism. Let's go to our next caller, Pete in Eau Claire. Hello, Pete.
Hello there. I'm on a cell phone parked on the side of the road in St. Paul. I drive trucks, so hopefully you can hear me.
We can. Thank you very much.
Yep, I guess I've done it a couple times in my life. Once when I was young, I believe either in high school or just out of high school, we had a rope swing on the Chip River down in the Shawtown area of Eau Claire. And I and a friend of mine were just on shore messing around, and a young kid was swinging on the rope, and all of a sudden it appeared he jumped in. But after the third pop up and down, I realized he couldn't swim, and so I stripped down and jumped in and pulled him out. I don't know who he was. I still don't know. To this day, who he was. I guess he lived in the Shawtown area.
And before you get to your other examples, Pete, do you remember what were you thinking?
He was going to die. I figured he was going to drown if something, wasn't done. So just went in and did it, I guess.
And you didn't really think twice? You just, hey, I'm going in?
Right. I was in Boy Scouts and kind of knew a little bit about life saving, so I really didn't have any fear. I just jumped in. I had been in that river many times myself, so I wasn't afraid of the river.
Well, and then what else did you do?
I lived out in Boise, Idaho for a couple of years, worked on a ranch out there, and one day the rancher and I went into town, and I believe on the way back from town there was a house fire, and somehow he got me up on the roof and handed me the garden hose, and we kept kept the roof watered down until the fire department showed up, and then got down and went on our way. I don't know what happened in the house, if it completely burned down or whatnot. I believe that the occupants were, had that out in the meantime.
Yeah, so what were you thinking there? Just, hey, I'm just going to help this person out? Or you could have just went on your way?
The same thing. It really was no fear. It was just something that needed to be done, and figured that if somebody didn't do something in the meantime, the house was going to, was going to get burnt down or people would be hurt. I guess it really was no thought process, just something needed to be done. So we were there and we were able to help out.
Well, way to go, Pete. Thank you for sharing the stories, and thank you for helping these people. A reaction, David Rand?
Yeah, so that sounds very, first of all, that's so great that you did those things. And the description sounds very much like the things that we heard the Carnegie Medal recipient saying. It was basically like, it was something you get done, did it, didn't think about it. It was just like, that was the thing that had to happen. And that's very consistent with this picture of a kind of automatic inclination to help others.
Yeah. So we can't take a pill and be like Pete, David Rand?
not yet, although it would be cool if we could work something like that out. Mm-hmm. We don't have any good answers for this kind of extreme altruism, but for more small-scale altruistic helping, we have studies showing that basically you get people used to being helpful. So if you have them interact in situations where it's advantageous to help others, then people get in the habit of it, and it makes them more likely to then subsequently help strangers just kind of one-off situations because they sort of had gotten used to helping in these other settings. So that could extend the extreme altruism context also.
John in River Falls is with us. Hello, John.
Yeah, hi, Joy. I've often thought that when I hear about a heroic action that, gosh, I hope if I'm in that situation, I will be heroic, right? I'll do the right thing. But I'm wondering if that, because I would feel bad, right, if I didn't do it, it could have a bad effect on my reputation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if, how do you separate out that sort of subconscious fear of having your reputation damaged from the true altruism?
Yeah, maybe you do it because what would people say if you didn't try to help?
It's a great question. Reputation is a huge, huge topic in terms of thinking about altruism and cooperation more generally. That it's a very well-established fact that when other people can see what you're doing, it makes you much more inclined to be helpful and to help others. And I bet it would be the case if you looked at these kind of extreme altruism situations that when there are observers, when there's other people there that can see you, it will make people more likely to do the heroic act. But there still are lots and lots of examples of places where people really do it in situations where there's not any reputational benefit. There's not anybody else there to see it other than the stranger that you're saving, that a lot of the times the people don't wind up, really having relationships with afterwards. And so the way that I think about these things relating is that I think that being concerned about your reputation and having reputational issues can lead you to developing true altruistic feelings, where if you get used to helping because there's reputational benefits, then you can internalize that and come to really care about others, and not just about your reputation.
Hmm. Mike in Richford is with us. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how you doing, Joy? I love your show. Hello, Professor. This happened to me. I was riding in a, going into town, to, as I told you, screener. I was just going to get a pizza, and it was right outside of town across from a gas station. And a lady was sitting in her Jeep, and the engine was on fire. And she didn't want to, so I pulled over, and I couldn't get her to get out of the Jeep. She was worried about her Jeep. So I finally got her out of the Jeep, and then there was sand and stuff on the ground. So I opened the hood. Well, I burned my fingers because the hood was so hot, and I was throwing sand to get the fire out. But I couldn't get that woman. She was more worried about her Jeep than getting out of the Jeep. And then she finally I said goodbye to her, and she thanked me. She was kind of dazed. But that was that. And another time, this guy, we were all sitting around his campfire. I was at a campground, and this guy had parked his motorcycle right by the campfire, and the motorcycle fell over into the fire. Everybody took off. I walked him into the fire and picked the motorcycle up and pushed it out of the way, and I call it extreme stupidity on my part. But
I was going to say, what were you thinking, Mike? Well, that's where I was wondering, Mike, you know, because we're running so short on time, and maybe extreme altruists, you know, I don't know how to say this. Maybe they're stupid, David Rand.
Well, you could. I think that there's two different dimensions. There's how smart or stupid you are, and then there's how deliberative versus going with your gut you are. And those aren't the same thing. And I think that the key thing for altruism is not how smart or stupid you are, but how willing to follow your gut instincts you are.
Yeah. What's next? What do we still have to look at and learn about extreme altruism?
I think there's really a lot to learn because it's so hard to study. You know, we would like to be able to really know what's going on inside people's heads while they're making the decisions rather than just asking them about it afterwards, because people's self-reports might not be accurate. And so this is where neuroimaging and things like that can be useful. And then there's also the question that you raised, which is how can we change how altruistic people are? How can we motivate people to be more willing to help strangers?
Yeah, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
David Rand is an assistant professor of psychology, economics, and management at Yale University. Thanks to Brianne Chasso and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.